Can you think of modern medicine without the use of the intravascular catheter? These devices have become such an integral and, quite frankly, indispensable component of medical practice. But we must remember that they are not without harm. As an invasive foreign object, these lines, as we like to call them, put patients at risk of local and systemic infectious complications. These complications include local insertion site infection, catheter-related bloodstream infections, septic thrombophlebitis, endocarditis, but can also include metastatic infections such as lung or brain abscesses, osteomyelitis, and endophthalmitis. Hello, listeners. This is Microbe Mail, and I'm your host, Vindana Chibabai. On this episode of Microbe Mail, we are walking the thin line that is catheter-related bloodstream infections. Today's guest is Dr. Molebogeng Koloyane. Molebogeng is an outreach microbiologist covering the West Rand and Ekurhuleni District Hospitals in Johannesburg, South Africa. Welcome to Microbe Mail, and thanks so much for joining me today, Molebogeng.
Hello, Vin, and thank you for having me here.
As always, let me remind you that you can sign up on the Microbe Mail website to receive email updates of new episode releases and storyboards. You can follow Microbe Mail on social media. Remember that we now have a Pinterest board where you can find each of our episode storyboards. All the Microbe Mail links are available in the show notes of the episode. And if you're looking for CPD points, you can head over to the EM Guidance mobile application to find episodes as well as links to questionnaires for CPD points. And lastly, remember that Microbe Mail is always the sharing kind of germ, so contact precautions are not necessary as you spread this one along. So Molebogeng, are you ready to start walking this line with me?
Yes, sure, Ben. Let's walk this fine line with your subscribers.
So first things first, we probably need to start this conversation by talking about the definition of catheter-related bloodstream infections. So how does one define Krabsies?
So then, basically, when we talk about catheter-related bloodstream infections, these are the presence of bacteremia originating from an intravenous catheter. These infections are one of the most frequent, lethal, and costly complications of central venous catheterization, and also the most common causes of nosocomial bacteremia.
Yeah, this is very true. So I guess the question we need to then ask is, are all IV catheters created equally? And are they all equally responsible for causing Krabsies?
Well, not quite. The incidence of catheter-related bloodstream infection varies by the type of catheter used, the frequency of catheter manipulation, and also patient-related factors such as the underlying disease and the acuity of the illness.
Okay.
Although, I must say, peripheral venous catheters are the devices most frequently used for vascular access, the incidence of local or bloodstream infections associated with these catheters is usually low. The majority of serious catheter-related infections are associated with central venous catheters, especially those that are placed in patients in the ICU. This may be due to the fact that central venous access might be needed for extended periods of times, and the patients can be colonized with hospital-acquired organisms, and the catheter can be manipulated multiple times per day for the administration of fluids, drugs, and blood products.
Right.
Moreover, some catheters can be inserted in urgent situations during which optimal attention to antiseptic techniques might not be feasible, as you know how it happens in emergency situations.
Correct, yeah. Yes. That's understandable. So then we need to talk about what factors might actually result in a line causing catheter-related bloodstream infections?
So acquiring a catheter-related bloodstream infection depends on the underlying disease, the method also that is used for catheter insertion, how the line was inserted, the site of the catheter insertion and duration, and also the purpose of catheterization. another medical procedure associated with an increase in the risk of catheter-related bloodstream infection is the administration of parenteral nutrition through intravascular catheters, and that can also be used a lot in most of these patients.
True.
There's also local risk factors such as poor personal hygiene, occlusive transparent dressing, moisture around the exit site, Staphylococcus aureus nasal colonization, and contiguous infections that support the role of bacterial colonization in the pathogenesis of catheter-related bloodstream infections.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but there are other risk factors which can be found, especially in renal patients who are undergoing dialysis, and these can include contamination of the dialysate or the equipment, inadequate water treatment, dialyzer reuse, older age, higher total intravenous iron dosage, increased recombinant human erythropoietin dose, lower hemoglobin levels, lower serum albumin levels, diabetes mellitus, peripheral atherosclerosis, and recent hospitalization or surgery. So the rates of catheter-related bloodstream infections will vary considerably in different studies.
Yeah, different studies and different patient populations.
Oh, most definitely, most certainly, yes.
That's a long list of risk factors. And I think it's, you know, it's almost like you need to walk around with a checklist to make sure that you've thought of all of the risk factors.
Exactly. But I think if you know your patient profile or your patient population, you will know what's commonly seen in that particular set of patients, yes.
Okay, so then when would one suspect a CRABSE in a patient with a central venous catheter or similar line? Clinically.
Yeah. So, I mean, your clinician will usually suspect it in a patient using a central venous catheter who presents with fever or chills, mm-hmm. unexplained hypotension, and no other localizing signs.
Okay.
So you would have excluded other reasons why the patient is having pyrexia. Mild symptoms include malaise and nausea, and severe symptoms include high fever with rigors, hypotension, vomiting, and changes in mental status in the setting of a normal catheter exit site or mm-hmm. tunnel, or in a normal physical examination.
Okay.
The exit site infection is indicated by the presence of erythema, swelling, tenderness, and purulent drainage around the catheter exit and the part of the tunnel external to the cuff. So also in patients who do not respond appropriately to treatment, we should consider severe sepsis and metastatic infectious complications such as infective endocarditis, mm-hmm. septic arthritis, osteomyelitis, spinal epidural abscess, and septic emboli. So you have to really look at your patient properly and wake them up fully.
Yeah, so a central venous catheter isn't just that simple central venous catheter infection.
Exactly.
Because you can get very severe systemic complications.
That's true.
And disseminated.
Mm.
Okay, we're going to move on now to the microbiologist's pet peeve. Are you ready for this one? And that's how we make the diagnosis of a catheter-related bloodstream infections. And, you know, there are specific diagnostic techniques. So can you talk us through these line removal diagnostic techniques and line sparing diagnostic techniques? And I say that it's a pet peeve because we talk about it all the time.
All the time, Vin. At each and every ward round, what we discuss. Yeah. Yes. So, I mean, firstly, when we consider a lab diagnosis of catheter-related bloodstream infection, as a microbiologist, we require a positive culture from blood taken from a peripheral site and a clear evidence that the catheter is the source.
Mm.
This is in addition to the clinical manifestation of infection and the absence of apparent source of bloodstream infection. So we look at the differential time to positivity, whereby a non-quantitative blood culture taken from the central venous catheter becomes positive at least 2 hours earlier than the peripheral blood culture. And in this case, this will be a line-sparing technique for the diagnosis of catheter-related bloodstream infection. And when the line is removed, or the line removal diagnostic technique, we look at a positive semi-quantitative catheter tip culture. So in the lab, we would have looked for more than 15 colony-forming units of the actual organism.
Mm.
And this will be with the same organism, species, and antibiogram isolated from a catheter segment. and the peripheral blood culture. So you will pair the central line
right.
with your blood culture. Hence, you will see or you will hear in the ward rounds, we usually ask if they say there was organism culture on a central venous catheter, we ask, was there a peripheral culture collected when the central venous catheter is removed? Because we do need to compare or pair those two together.
Correct.
Yes.
So also just for the clinicians listening, you will always find that semi-quantitation on the laboratory report from microbiology stating the number of colony-forming units that were in fact identified.
Yes.
So it's important not just to look at the organism that was cultured, but for a central line specifically that was sent for MCNS, look at the number of colony-forming units that were seen.
That's true, yeah, because that will show the significance of that culture that you have.
Correct, so when it's less than 15 colony-forming units per mil, likely it was just a colonizer of the line.
That's true.
And doesn't actually need to be treated.
Yes, sure, definitely.
And as I always say, when in doubt, just pick up the phone and phone the microbiologist to discuss.
That is very important. And I like that because, yeah, we are open to any queries. I mean, you've got our numbers. Yes, it's very important.
Okay, so then talking about the treatment now, moving away from diagnostics. Treatment of Krabbe is not actually as simple and straightforward. And unfortunately, we've got a short episode, so we can't really go through and do a comprehensive job of discussing all of the treatment components.
That is so true, yes.
But can you maybe give us some general advice regarding management and a couple of tips?
Yeah, Van, you are so correct. Management is not just straightforward and a simple thing. And like you say, we've got such a short duration of time. We'll just need to summarize some of the general concepts that one can use to decide on how to manage a patient with a catheter-related bloodstream infection. So catheters should be removed from patients with catheter-related bloodstream infection associated with any local or systemic inflammation or immunocompromised condition. Antibiotic therapy for catheter-related infections is often initiated empirically, and the choice of antibiotics will depend on the severity of the patient's clinical disease, the risk factors for infections, and the likely pathogens associated with a specific intravascular device.
Okay.
Vancomycin is recommended for the empirical therapy for gram-positive isolates, such as methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. Also note that coagulase negative staph catheter-related bloodstream infection, there is generally no need to initiate antibiotics. Just a line removal is adequate. I mean, we find that a lot of times clinicians do start the patient on vancomycin, even if we know it's a skin colonizer. So one will actually need to keep that in mind when you get a coagulase negative staph catheter-related bloodstream infection.
It's a pity this is an audio-only podcast. Otherwise, we would have put that in bold, underlined, and red text.
Yeah, so certainly. Yeah. And then when you think about gram-negative bacilli, empiric cover should be based on your local antimicrobial susceptibility data and the severity of the disease. In addition to the coverage for gram-positive pathogens, empirical therapy for suspected catheter-related bloodstream infection involving femoral catheters in critically ill patients should include a coverage for gram-negative bacilli and candida species.
Okay.
Yes. So definitely, the choice of antimicrobials should be based on your local epidemiology at all times. Yes. There's also other therapeutic options such as antibiotic lock therapy for catheter salvage. However, if antibiotic lock therapy cannot be used, systemic antibiotics should be administered through the colonized catheter. That will help also in terms of if you have biofilms in that catheter.
Yeah.
Lastly, since catheter-related bloodstream infection is a healthcare-associated infection and thus iatrogenic in nature, the main management strategy is in fact prevention rather than cure.
Okay. So just, one point to add on to that is that the antibiotic lock therapy is kind of salvage therapy. So if you've got patients who you really can't find other venous access. It shouldn't be kind of...
It should be like your last resort. Yeah, it should be like your last resort if you want to have to really go that route.
Yeah. No, and I completely agree with you. It's an iatrogenic infection. Yes. And so we need to make sure that our focus is on prevention and not cure.
Certainly, yes.
So then that brings us to the next question then. So can you briefly explain to the listeners how Krabbe's disease can be prevented?
Yes, Vin. I mean, I know it's just a cliche that everybody uses prevention is better than cure, but let's just practice that cliche in our setting. So the key components of prevention in the preventative programs provided by the CDC and the ETA includes hand hygiene. So hand washing with soap and water, or even using your alcohol-based hand wrap. You need strict aseptic techniques, so with your maximal sterile barrier precautions, you need to use 2% chlorhexidine skin preparation for disinfecting or cleaning the skin prior to insertion.
Okay.
You need to avoid femoral vein as a choice of central line placement, preferably go for a subclavian vein insertion. You need to promptly remove when no longer required. And replacement of central line placed during an emergency situation as soon as, like, for example, as soon as possible, like maybe 48 hours after you've inserted it in an emergency setting, it is useful to actually replace it after. Yes. Furthermore, there's guidelines for maintenance of central venous catheters. And in our setting, we make use of the bundles of care to ensure good maintenance of our catheter venous, our central line venous catheters. Yes.
And that recommendation to remove the emergency placed central lines within 48 hours is it's a practical one, because usually in an emergency situation, you probably haven't adhered to all the IPC recommendations, and the likelihood of developing an infection from that line is higher because of the urgency of putting it in.
That's true. Yeah. Most definitely, especially in our very busy emergency
departments.
Yeah. I mean, you can see at some stage with Bara, when you've got a whole lot of accidents or maybe, you know, surgical
emergencies
and the likes, you do need to be very quick in terms of insertion. Yeah. So you may miss a few steps in the your aseptic technique.
Okay. And then regarding the bundles of care, can you talk us through some of these components of the bundle for preventing central line associated infection?
So the bundles from the Best Care Always is similar to what I've just went through now, which we find in the CDC and the ITSA.
Okay.
So hand hygiene, barrier precautions, chlorhexidine as an antisepsis of choice to clean the skin, and also the optimum site, as we said, better the subclavian rather than femoral. Daily review is important, because I mean, even in ward runs, we talk about how long has the patient has the central line in situ if we're busy waking up the source of infection. And the line secure and dressing must be clean and intact. Yeah, it's very
it's the same thing.
It's similar.
I'll just cut it out.
Okay,
M, guess what? It's game time.
Let's get this game going.
Oh, look, Kathleen's standing outside.
Oh, okay. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Kathleen.
I hope you are ready for some microbe riddles.
Okay.
We're going to play the best out of five today.
Oh, okay.
So,
good luck to you.
Thank you. Let's see who's going to beat you.
No pressure. Listen carefully. If I need to repeat something, please tell me.
Okay. Do we just shout out the answer?
Yeah, you shout your name.
Okay.
And then I'll select you, and then you're allowed to speak.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Okay. Are you ready?
Yes, ready.
Okay. Question number one. This drug is very rarely used as a first-line agent. It is one of the big guns. I will help you when the infective source is in the abdomen. I struggle against Pseudomonas.
Vin?
Yes, Vin?
Tigercycline?
Perfection! Yay!
One for me!
So, one for Vin, zero for Connie. I'm very sorry, but it's only one down. Okay, next. Okay. You ready for the next one?
Yes.
Molebogeng. Use her name, Molebogeng. Okay. I haven't been calling her Connie.
Okay. This is a, okay, sorry, question number two. This is a gram-positive organism causing green discoloration on blood agar plate. If it causes a lung or a brain infection, penicillin or ketraxin will save your patient.
Molebogeng. Would that be a streptococcus pneumonia?
Yay, that Yay! Is correct. Well done, one all. This is going to be a tight game. Okay, are we ready for question number three?
Yes. Let's go.
I am a gram-negative bacillus, pretty and cute in pink, because of a red pigment I produce.
Vin.
Oh, Vin, is she even finished?
I still wanted to sound stronger than Colistin, but Vin, what is your answer?
Serratia marcescens.
That is great. Okay. So we've got two for Vin.
Yay!
Next question, question number four. I am a gram-negative bacillus, once again, found in the urine. In the lab, I'm indole positive. Need I say more? Yes.
E. coli.
Perfect. Oh, we are at a tie.
Okay.
Tiebreaker.
Yeah. I'm stressing here. Okay. Final question.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. I cover gram-negative bacilli. Well, except for the non-fermenters. Okay. I'm a once-daily dose and the narrow spectrum of my class.
Vin.
Vin, what is your answer?
Ritipenem.
Yay!
Oh, Vin.
We have a winner.
Yay, I get to
that
win.
Was tight, ladies. Well done,
Vin.
Thank you.
You'll come for revenge next time.
Yeah, definitely. I'll definitely come and slash her.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Penny.
We'll
it was fun.
Soon.
Yes.
I'm going to go work on some more riddles.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Good idea.
Okay.
Thanks, Kathleen.
Enjoy. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, that was fun.
It was fun. Yeah, it was fun. So yeah. I had a microbe name ready for you.
Oh, you
anyway,
did? Okay.
And yes, I think for just for being such a good sport, and it was such a tight game anyway, I think I'm going to bestow upon you Koloyani Bacillus.
Oh.
Molebohengiai.
Oh my goodness, who's going to remember that?
I don't know.
Like any of the other microorganisms.
That's true. We're going to have to shorten it somehow.
Yes.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks. Awesome. Mm-hmm. So we're almost at the end. So do you have any final tips for our listeners?
So I want to actually end by quoting Dennis Parson. Okay, let me stop that. I'd like to actually end by quoting Dennis Parsons Burkett, who said, diseases can really be eliminated through early diagnosis or good treatment, but prevention can eliminate disease.
Mm.
So let us do our best to practice good clinical practice to ensure infection prevention for our patients.
Thank you. That's a good one. Is Burkitt's lymphoma named after Dennis Parkinson Burkitt?
Is that the thing? I don't know.
No, okay. I'll
I didn't
come
check.
I'll leave that after.
That would lead. Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining me on Microbe Mail, Molebogeng. I hope you'll come and join me again sometime in the future.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm really, really honored. And thank you for hosting me today. I really enjoyed everything. Towing the line.
We always love receiving your feedback about each episode. So pop us a message by email or on social media to let us know. So that's it from me, Vin, your microbe messenger. See you again soon with more contagious mail.